Mount Morgan.
Why can't I move? Do you mind?
You're all in a cast. You broke a lot of bones.
Who?
You. You smashed your car. They say you went skiing down that Mount Morgan in a Porsche.
Where? Where? I'm where?
Miller wrote this play as a response to the moral and emotional ruthlessness he witnessed at the time. That's 8 p.m. Saturday, WBAI Playhouse on listener-sponsored, locally controlled WBAI New York.
9 p.m. WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. Time now for Untitled with Malika Lee Whitney.
Words of inspiration tonight on this edition of Untitled by yours truly, Malika Lee Whitney. And as I've written in the upcoming program notes, I'm evoking Pick Me Place, a program that aired on WBAI some years ago, described as a program for children and the child in all of us, and I'm still growing up here. Tonight we'll have some youth who will be engaged in spoken word, honoring Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We welcome return engagements with Raven, Chris Sanju, Chinua, Dylan, and Christian. Laura Sims, globally recognized and acclaimed storyteller, writer, and educator, she'll be joining us as well. We'll pay homage to M2ME, messenger and muse, in memoriam. And many of you may know that he transitioned just a few days ago, an incredibly insightful and progressive musician, producer, songwriter, radio personality, and activist. And the program concludes with commentary by Dr. Sam Anderson, mathematician, author, educator, advocate, and a serious truth teller. There's a nice image of a book by Faith Ringgold entitled My Dream of Martin Luther King. And it's very colorful, and I think it's a book for all ages. I'm really excited about the program this evening. And Max is going to work his magic just to make sure that everything goes in flow. And he'll give me the cue when one of my special folks are on, and I know that's going to happen with the background sounds of Kevin Nathaniel and Beer Sanctuary on the track called Light. I'm holding in my hand a copy of Flyboy 2, the Greg Tate Reader. Can't wait to get my eyes wrapped around it. So, Max, go with Kevin.
lines.
Okay, so we're starting with Raven, because I just called directly.
Oh.
Hello.
Hello.
Raven?
Yes, I'm here.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
You sound a little far away, so welcome once again to WBAI. So let's get this acrostic poem moving. We're going to have to pare things down a little because we've lost a little time here, so I'm going to ask you just to begin the acrostic piece with your line.
Okay. For the marches that he led. A, for always trying to get ahead. R, for the racism that he fought. T, for the truth that he sought. I, for the inspiring way he preached. N, for the nation he tried to reach.
Bless your heart. We're going to leave it there. Next on the line, introduce yourself.
Hi.
Who's speaking?
This is Christian.
Well, let the world know. Please share your acrostic piece. And we're going to have to leave it there because we lost a little bit of time. So carry on.
All righty. L, for the liberation of us all. U, for united, lest we fall. T, for the task that he endured. H is for the hatred he worked to cure. E for everyone for whom he cared. R for the righteousness that he shared.
Hang on. Cassandra, would you please share your piece?
Okay. K for king, a name that's royal. I for individual so loyal. N for now, and yes, it's time to say. G is for glory to his name.
I'm going to ask you, Raven, if you would just share perhaps something inspiring in the part of the poem that you read.
Something inspiring in what I read was that it shows how Martin Luther King Jr. has truly fought for the rights of African Americans. And so that
Thank
we're all.
Thank you so much. People. Thank you. And for Christian, for you, briefly?
Something in my poem is the H letter. He worked to cure hatred that he faced, but he kept striving and fighting against the hatred, I guess you could say.
And Cassandra?
A lesson we can learn from Dr. King is all the racism that he fought through to help us blacks stay alive and stay safe.
I appreciate all of you, and we'll get back to the larger part of the presentation because the principles that we're discussing, having to do with the tremendous contributions of Dr. King, are lasting, so we'll have another opportunity to tighten things up. So thank you all so very much. We're going to go to a very brief break. And bring on two more of our guests for this tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King. Thank you all. Dylan, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Good evening.
All right.
How are
well,
you?
Would you please share what you have to contribute to this special program honoring Dr.
Yes.
King? And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. We will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends.
And in reading that, how would you interpret it for yourself?
I think this phrase means to me that you should not listen to the hate of your enemies, but pay close attention to what your friends do for you and to see if they have your back or not.
Definitely, and that we need. Chinua, would you share yours?
There comes a time when one must take a position that is neither safe nor politic nor popular. Yet he must take it because his conscience tells him it's right.
And how would you interpret that for yourself?
The way I would interpret it is saying that if you feel very strongly about something, if you believe something very strongly, you should stick to that. You should be very persistent in your own opinion and stick to it and not change because of what other people think.
I like that. That's a good motto to have. And before we close, I just want to offer most of the young voices that you've heard have been on the program previously. They're all active in a variety of activities and professional interests, including theater and dance and music, photography. And it's really a pleasure to know that you're going to be in the bright lights again. And if you haven't been there already, surely those opportunities will be coming forth, and I certainly hope that although we're having some interruption with what's happening in schools, you know, due to the pandemic, that you all stay safe and well. And thank you so much for joining us, and I hope to see you and speak to you again very soon. Do take care. This is listener-sponsored WBAI Radio, 99.5 FM on the dial if you have one of those. Or you can certainly continue or begin listening to us at WBAI.org, streaming worldwide. And we're going to prepare ourselves for another special guest by the name of Laura Sims. And before that, a selection from Nina Simone.
We want to do a tune written for today, for this hour, for Dr. Martin Luther King. We stated before that the whole program is dedicated to his memory, but this tune is written about him and for him. And so we had yesterday to learn it. And so we'll see. Once upon this planet Earth lived a man of humble birth, preaching love and freedom for his fellow man. He was dreaming of the day peace would come to earth to stay, and he spread this message all across the land. The other cheek, he'd bleed. Love thy neighbor was his creed. Pain, humiliation, death, he did not dread. With his Bible at his side, from his foes he did not hide. It's hard to think this great man is dead. Oh, yeah.
Max?
Hello.
Yes, proceed, please.
Laura? Hello,
Magica.
Thank you so much. I know the moment that offered the sound of the voice of Nina Simone so passionately speaking of someone for whom she has so much love. Let that lift us up. And with you being on the other end of this line makes me feel that way. First and foremost, I have to say how honored I am to be connected to you for all that you represent, for all that you give, being so globally significant to those of us who love story. So thank you for the ways in which you've spread it around and studied and learned from other cultures and including all of that in the ways that you present. So I'm very interested to know that with so much of life going digital and audiences being tuned into things in automatic ways, are you having to adapt in certain kinds of ways in the manner in which you present? I know it's sort of a mouthful, but I know you get me.
Well, I think in general, first of all, I want to say that sometimes I think that having heard Nina Simone when I was 16 at the Village Vanguard changed my life completely. And it was so alive, so transcending, that I remember thinking to myself, if I do anything in this world, I have to do it with the passion and genuineness of this woman's voice. So I really loved hearing her right before your beautiful voice came on, Malika. And I think we've all had to adjust to this time. And I was thinking about it today, that when I first told stories and started teaching extensively on Zoom, this kind of mediated form of communication, it was really disorienting. But there's something about the desire to reach out, to be heard, to hear others, that the sort of energy field of the storytelling changed, where I didn't put out energy expecting the energy to come back in the same way. And I can't even explain it. But so something internally adjusted so that I could feel the intimacy and the liveness online that at first boggled me and actually basically gave me a headache. But... but now I'm finding that I can tell stories, and it has something to do with the images and the sound of the voice and how people just thrive on wanting to be carried deeper into their own life and out of any troubling preoccupations by being inside a story that has... sort of overcome whatever the limit of the internet was for me in the beginning. Is that a good answer?
Perfect. There was a point in time with storytelling where our presence in a school classroom was often a respite or relief for teachers. You know, If they had that break time, you know, they'd be anxious to use it for themselves. and I wouldn't go so far as to say babysitting, but, you know, we would step into those rooms and eventually, you know, get that embrace of attention that makes the storytelling work. And I'm just wondering with... all that is going on in the teaching and learning cycles, what do you find the connecting points, you know, because we want the educators in the room to get as much out of it as the children. Would you share perhaps an experience that you may have had and how you navigate
that? I will tell you an experience, but also want to say that I think that at this moment, in the schools, in our houses, that engage relationship and imagination and story is needed more than ever before. And what our ancestors understood about the spiritual nature of listening and imagination is what can really nourish the heart and the mind of our children, so they can not be swept away with despair and the dissociation of technology that's so extreme, especially when you can't be with other children in a relaxed manner. But the very first time, and I think you probably were part of this whole kind of series of things that happened in the 60s and 70s to us, I was brought to a public school in Brooklyn. It was maybe, you know, one of the first times I had gone to a school. And somebody at the New York Council, I think it's the New York State Council on the Arts, had this idea of sending me into classrooms. It was third graders, and the teacher kind of welcomed me, just as you said, as if like, oh, good, now somebody can sort of entertain these kids and do this kind of distracting thing, and I can get back to grading papers or whatever. And I felt that immediately. But I was about to begin when she leaned over to me and she said, "You see that boy in the second row?" She pointed to a boy who was looking down. And she said, "He's trouble. So if he acts up, you just tell me, or I will I'll stop the whole thing." So I started and I said to the kids, "Hey, I'm a storyteller. I'm going to tell you a story." And a boy, not the one who was trouble, just blurted out and said, "No, that's for kids." So I said, "Okay." I said, "Listen, I'll tell a story. And if you all think that it's not for you, if you don't like it, I'll leave." And everybody was satisfied. And I ended up just telling four stories. Okay. Nobody interrupted me.
Wonderful.
And I want to tell you what happened, because the bell rang, the first bell. And a girl just said, "Please, is there another story?" And I said, "I have no time, but I have a question for you." And I said, "What would happen if there were no stories in the world?" And the boy who had blurted out and said, "That's for kids," said, "It would be terrible."
Aww.
"Why?" He said, "If there were no stories, there are some people who would never go to sleep. They would just wait and wait and wait." And one after another, the kids were calling out until a girl said to me, "Stories make the world. We need stories." And then the second bell rang. Everybody left but that boy, the boy who the teacher had said was trouble, and he lifted up his hands, palms facing outward, and on one hand he had drawn with a red magic marker a heart, and on the other palm it said, "I love you."
Well, that's a wonderful real-life story for true. If you're just joining us, on the line is the one and only Laura Sims. Are your audiences balanced with as many adults? Because adults need stories as well. And I know that much of your work also addresses social issues and things that we are living and breathing around. And how are you reaching out to them, now that there's different ways of communicating? Everything is on a fast track.
Well, I'm telling less stories to children on within Zoom on these years, and much more to adults. And also I'm doing a lot, as much as I can, of training people to use storytelling and really trying to help people to see beyond just content and sort of moral lessons, to understand how profound it is when you're engaged in the story, whether you're a child or an adult. And I think that storytelling is an act of unbiased communication. And I'm not talking about the stories that sort of try to make a point or that sort of manipulate you with, you know, this is how you should be. I'm talking about listening, deep listening, which is reciprocal, where you actually imagine the story. You become everything in the story. It is an act of social justice. And no matter who's in the audience, it is completely equalized in the listening, because everyone is becoming the story, and there is no hierarchy in genuine listening.
How can listeners connect with you? Are there workshops currently planned?
Well, retreats? I just started a series, but I'm going to begin in the end of February. I'm going to begin three new classes, and one is really just basics for teachers and anyone who would like to learn the basic skills of storytelling, and that's called the Great Story Immersion. And then I will continue doing something that I've started in COVID called, you know, Stories Alone Together, where writers and storytellers, naturalists and educators come together, and we really provide a dedicated time to be able to do your work and share with others the stories that are being told.
Is the projection and hope for in person or otherwise online like life is now?
I have no idea what, you know, I don't think any of us know exactly what's going to happen next. So I'm planning these courses online because they've been extremely enriching online. And hopefully, once again, we will be able to have, you know, in-person teaching, which has a whole other dimension to it. The best thing for people is I'll give you my email, in which then I can send information to people, or people can ask me questions. And if I can't provide that course, I could recommend somebody. So if people wrote to Laura's office, L-A-U-R-A-S, office at yahoo.com, I can put them on a mailing list. I am sending out stories to people. I'm planning on a podcast in the late winter, early spring about storytelling as well. I just think we have to relook at storytelling and really value all that is restored in us when we listen. And if we can imagine the world differently, we can change the world. And if we just rely on ideas and solutions only, we just keep repeating the same things that we've been doing before. So this is a kind of thunder-like enrichment, which opens up our capacity to really imagine and see with tremendous intimacy and also a distance that we can see the whole picture and be of help to each other and ourselves.
Well, that sounds like a wonderful opportunity. I wondered, is there website information that you'd like to share as well, or is it your preference
well, my website
to have folks?
Is so, my confession of my website, which I hope I can revitalize in the next month or two, but it's my name, Laura Sims, and Sims with two M's, S.com. Usually has schedules. It has lots of articles and videos and information about storytelling as well. Also, every summer for 4 months, I curate stories, which have been for 30 years outdoors at the Hans Christian Andersen statue, free to all ages. And the last 2 years we've done it online. I don't know if, hopefully we'll be back in the park, but it's also been phenomenal online. And if you look up the Hans Christian Andersen Storytelling Center, there are now about 80 videos of some of the most wonderful storytellers in the world. Because with Zoom, I can have someone in Australia and someone in Cote d'Ivoire telling stories together online. And so it is just a treasure house of stories that you can listen to together as adults or with your family or your grandparents. And one story inspires another. If you get caught up in a story, you always want to tell another one or have a memory.
Of course. As well, you know,
I certainly
am inspired to invite you with the next cycle of my kind of slowly reintroducing Picnic Place. It was a program that was primarily about storytelling, right?
Yeah, of course.
So just by having the young voices on earlier, there were some tech glitches with contacts. You know, ish happens occasionally, but at least they all had an opportunity to share something. So I want to thank you so much and ask if you would one more time give the contact that is your preference for our listeners who may want to follow up and be in the space wherever you are, the little square one or the loft.
Thank you, Malika, and I can't wait for Pink Big Place to come back.
Yes,
it was so wonderful.
Thank you so much, for sure.
And you must come tell stories this summer at the statue.
Definitely. So email address again.
Laura's Office, Lauras Office at yahoo.com. Or look at my unkept up but plush website, laurasims.com. And
thank you.
I always get back. Thank you so much. And
yeah,
stay well.
It sounds like more, and I'll make sure that that happens real soon to the degree that I can, and we're just hopeful that the winds will blow change. Best to
you
always. Thank you so much, Laura Sims. Malika Lee Whitney here. The program is Untitled, and we're here at listener-sponsored, non-commercial, non-corporate WBAI.org, streaming on the World Wide Web. Max, I'm just going to go with theme from the film Native Son, for M2Me, because we're going to have to move swiftly to Sam Anderson. Will that work for you?
Sure.
Okay. And the rest for another day and time. Sounds you're hearing, a theme from the film Native Son. For M2Me, there's New York Undercover, working with Stephanie Mills, Phyllis Hyman, Need I say juicy fruit? Need I say you, me, and he? Notorious Big IG. He was already on the map. M2May's always been on the map. But, you know, that sound was bitten, if there's such a word, for Juicy. Miles Davis was a very important musical connection. And, of course, I could go on and on and on with his amazing talents and credits as a progressive individual, musician, producer, songwriter, radio personality, and activist, as I said earlier. Sam?
Not yet. I keep getting another fellow at that number. I'm looking through old show runs to see if I can find the right number.
And Sam was given the 212 number to dial himself in. So let's see if I can connect with him. While we're waiting, can you go to the 945 of Miles Davis, M2May, from the album Get Up With It, and I will try to get Sam directly. Hello?
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, okay, I was trying to get you. So, you know what's on the agenda. I'm going to leave it up to you. Talked about the mayor cop and so many other things. So your choice. We had a preliminary, so I'm sure you have a general idea.
Right. I just want to briefly start off by saying to your audience that Basim Chawi is going to be moderating a public education forum tomorrow, and it's going to start on his show at 6 o'clock tomorrow evening. And it's our coalition to finally end mayoral control, and we're going to be talking about the role of parents in public schools and how to get parent power back into New York City public schools. For those who cannot make the 6 o'clock radio program, we can get you to register for the 6:30 part of the program by simply emailing me, and I'll send you the registration. My email is blackeducator@mac.com. 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 So that it's very, very important because, as we know, as Sister Malika has said, Mayor Cox, Mayor Adams, is pushing privatization further than Bloomberg and de Blasio has done. And it's going to be on steroids, just like his privatization of public housing is going to be on steroids. For those who may not know, one of his major housing advisors is the guy who owns the house that caught on fire, I mean, the apartment complex that caught on fire in the Bronx. And he's not, to date, he has not moved away from this guy being his advisor. So it's a very bad situation that we're in New York City, when we have a mayor who has proven, as borough president of Brooklyn, to be a developer's darling, to be the developer's partner in gentrification everywhere in Brooklyn. And now he has five boroughs to do that kind of work. So we have a lot of issues to
definitely
deal with.
Let's, if you will, this whole issue of the voter suppression, it's just like, it's 2022.
Yes.
Why are we still asking for permission to exercise that franchise? Help me understand.
Yes, the voter suppression is part of the natural progression of fascism. You cannot have established fascism while you have the ability of the people to vote. And in the United States, that is compounded by the issue of race, right? And as the population in the United States grows to be increasingly people of color, how do white fascists maintain power in that? They have to redefine voting. They have to suppress the black vote, the brown vote, right? They have to do that. And the way they do, the way they're doing it is what I call slow motion fascism. Through the various laws that have been developed throughout the country, including New York State. Don't think that New York State is so liberal that it's far and far different from Mississippi or Florida. It is, and these laws, all of these laws, are being passed by conservative legislative bodies, many of whom have Democratic Party support at that local state level. So don't think that the Democratic Party is not part of this, not part of this plan, not part of this.
You mean to tell me they may have had something to do with no Saturdays, the polls close early, no water, no food for seniors waiting in long lines. I can't imagine.
And also, not supporting the idea that election day should be a holiday, a paid holiday, right? No, you know, the Democratic Party, for the most part, does not support that. So there's a lot of hypocrisy, within the Democratic Party.
And I have one more question about the politics. You know, the word filibuster is said often, and I'm not sure I understand it fully and how it came into being. And what does it mean?
Filibuster came into being when, basically when legislation was planned to be passed to support post-Civil War era, to support the progressive agenda of the then Progressive Republican Party, and include black males to have the ability to vote, to include a number of other progressive legislation, public education in the South, et cetera, et cetera. There were a lot of Northern and Southern elected officials in Congress who opposed that. And so one of the things that they developed was this thing where you would just bluster and talk forever, driving other politicians to say, all right, stop. We're not going to deal with that vote. All right, let's move on to something else. And so that's how the the origin of the filibuster came about. The ability to talk away legislation. And it was always, the filibuster always came up, always around the issue of race or around the issue of gender issues.
I think the educational piece that you mentioned at the top should be repeated.
Okay. Tomorrow night, starting at 6 o'clock on Basir Mchawi's program, Education at the Crossroads, we're going to have a discussion about mayoral control vis-a-vis parent involvement. We're going to have parents who are active parents who are going to be talking about the issue of how to resolve, how to fight back, beat back mayoral control. And it'll start at 6 o'clock. For those who may not be able to get on the radio at 6 and or want to continue that discussion, they can email me for the registration for the 6:30 component, to register for the 6:30 component. My email address is blackeducator@mac.com. That's Macintosh. Mac.
All right. Well, I will certainly have my ear tuned in for that because it's so important. Because even right now, there's some back and forth on whether or not remote learning is going to be reintroduced.
And you know what that's doing. Many black and brown parents don't want their children in school in this Omicron period.
Exactly. Sam, I call you Sam Jackson. You're definitely not an actor. You're an activist. He's an actor. You're an activist. So let me make that distinction. So that's going to be a wrap for us with this edition of Untitled. And I think the vital information about what you mentioned is very, very helpful. Max, I want to thank you. You know, we had to make some on-the-spot changes, and we do what we do nonetheless. And, again, I want to thank all the participants on the program this day. Very, very, very special thanks to Raven, Cassandra, Chinua, Dylan, Christian, and also to Laura Sims, and, of course, to Sam Anderson, mathematician, author, educator, and truth teller. Thank you all for staying in tune. Max, you can run the appeal as we need to do because that's necessary for the required support of listener-sponsored, non-commercial, non-corporate, very listener-friendly, WBAI.org. Thank you, Max.
The value of this radio station in a time like this cannot be overstated. Our progressive programming, covering arts and culture, public affairs, social and political issues, means so much to many. And that includes you, right? Support WBAI to ensure our impact and continued longevity for a time like this.
Greed is good.
Wall Street's king of the junk bonds was indicted today.
Friday's huge oil spill off Valdez, Alaska.
Mrs. Helmsley is accused of tax evasion.
I have sinned against you, my Lord.
This week on WBAI Playhouse, a trip backwards in time to the 1980s, where the greed and extravagance of a decade comes crashing down on the life of the protagonist in Arthur Miller's The Ride Down Mount Morgan.
Why can't I move? Do you mind?
You're all in a cast. You broke a lot of bones.
Who?
You. You smashed your car. They say you went skiing down that Mount Morgan in a Porsche.
Where?
Where? I'm where?
Miller wrote this play as a response to the moral and emotional ruthlessness he witnessed at the time. That's 8 p.m. Saturday, WBAI Playhouse, on listener-sponsored, locally controlled WBAI New York.
Is all of the excitement about? Well, DJ Black Icon One, The Law, and myself, Mama Soul, are super excited to share with you the Harlem connection to Women Who Rock. And we will be joined by a special guest as well, the one and only Miss Liv Warfield, because she is indeed a woman who rocks. So join us this Friday, 10 p.m., right here on WBAI 99.5 FM,
New York,
and worldwide on WBAI.org. And don't forget to catch the replay on Sundays at 3 a.m. And also, we invite you to take a deeper dive into the Harlem Connection radio show by listening to the program archives.
May I use your phone, Mr. Mo?
Whether you get up early on Saturday morning or stay up late on Friday night, we have good news for you.
Back of the Book, the only radio program.